ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. हरे कृष्ण. Welcome back to ISKCON of Silicon Valley. I feel happy to be here. This is a sanctuary, a place where we can come to have association with those who are dedicated to the practice of bhakti yoga, following the system passed down through the parampara. That means from one teacher to the next, there's a tradition behind this. And by carefully following as closely as one can, according to one's circumstances in life, the process that is passed down, one will notice for oneself that there's progress. Of course, there may be obstacles. There will be obstacles. There are obstacles, naturally. Not the least of which can be overcome by a garland. In fact, Uddhava says in one of his prayers that by wearing the Lord's garlands and taking the remnants of his food, we'll overcome all obstacles in life. So it's inevitable that there will be complexities to overcome, but there's an edge that one gains by the continuous process of bhakti, even if it's not done very well, even if it's done sporadically. But if one can somehow or other stay close as possible to hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, chanting Hare Krishna, living in a holy place like this, or congregating here, and worshiping the deity, then even if one doesn't have complete faith in the process, or doesn't have any faith in it, if one isn't offensive, but remains a little attached, or connected, I should say, to the process, then one will make advancement in devotional service. And that may come in fits and starts. It may come as one continues. One has a little faith, enough to keep one close to some degree. And at some point, one may have some breakthrough, even if it's tiny. That may become the form of a feeling that I understand that there is a higher goal in life, and that there's a great urgency to trying to reach that, and that there's a very specific process which is laid out by the Supreme Authority, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's reached out to the world, he's reached out to me, he's there within my heart, and if I continue trying, he will help me. And as one continues throughout one's life, one will find that Krishna is always there to help and gives assistance from every different aspect of life. And one's circumstances will also change. Whatever obstacles are in one's way now, if one continues, will gradually move one way or the other. And if you stick to your practice, however imperfectly, you'll notice that the obstacles leave and you still have your practice of bhakti. And then at some point it can become stronger, especially by good association. By keeping the mantra going and staying in the practice to the best of one's ability, one may then be able to recognize good association. That is, those devotees who are advanced. And when one gets that kind of association, one will naturally advance in devotional service. Sadhu sanga, sadhu sanga, sarva shastra koi, lava matra sadhu sanga, sarva siddhi hoi. In fact, the Shastras make many proclamations about how important it is to have sangha with sadhus. The word sadhu you'll find in various forms like sadhaka, which means somebody who's practicing devotional service, and sadhya, which means the goal of the practice, and sadhu is the one who has perfected the goal. So by getting that kind of association, then one gets free advancement in devotional service. So we keep this atmosphere alive just so that we can all come here and take advantage of hearing chanting, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, seeing the deity, associating with devotees, experiencing the atmosphere of a holy place. And anyone who continues to come here will naturally advance, especially if you take prasad. So, and tonight I'm going to read from the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam because I've been finding in it myself some great inspiration. So I thought I'd try to share the same kind of inspiration I'm getting from the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. Let me try to describe the kind of inspiration I'm getting, especially from the chapter that I'm reading, and that is that it's important to be grateful for what we have and not become complacent or feel entitled to more. We can appreciate that when we came to Krishna consciousness, somehow or other, someone reached out to us and we were given a great opportunity. And having been given that opportunity and practicing Krishna consciousness, we're making advancement, which is the most valuable thing that one can do in this life. Advancement in Krishna consciousness is the most important of all ways in which one can have some asset. It is the greatest asset. And Bharat Maharaj, who was a great king and devotee, Vaishnava, he was one of the sons of Rishabhadeva. Rishabhadeva comes from a line of great kings, not the least of which was Maharaj Nabi, his father, and then Rishabhadeva had 100 sons, out of whom there are the Navayogendras, who are celebrated especially in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Their instructions to Maharaj Nimi are epic instructions. And all of his sons were greatly highly qualified, but out of all of them, Bharat was the best. He was the most advanced. In fact, you'll find in Lord Rishabhadeva's instructions to his 100 sons, wouldn't you want to be there when he's giving those instructions? Prabhupada said, it's not really for them so much because they were already on such a high platform, but it's for everybody else. And you can be there. That's the amazing feature of revealed scripture, is that you can hear it for yourself and be, and you're there. There's no difference. You can be right in the same assembly as Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, front row. In fact, with the presentation of the Bhagavatam that we have, we can hear even more because we have Srila Prabhupada's purports, in which he gives the inner meaning of the various situations we read about, as is given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and other acharyas. And by that we can enter deeper and deeper within the meaning of the teachings that we're hearing. So Rishabhadeva gave some extremely powerful instructions to his 100 sons. One of those was that you should follow Bharat. He's the best of all of you, and you should make him like your spiritual master and follow him. So Bharat, even he ruled the kingdom for thousands of years, as was available with the kind of lifespan that he had and others had at that time. And even as he was still young, he gave up his kingdom. This is the direction that the Vedas give us. And the entire Varnashram system is meant to help us be on a track so that we can gradually come to the end of all our attachments in the material world, especially the attraction between male and female. This is pointed out in various places, but especially by Rishabhadeva in his teachings. Pumsa Striya Maitini Bhava Metam Tayor Mitu Hridaya Granthamahu Atogriya Kshetra Sutapta Vitar Janasya Mohoya Mahamameti. He tells his sons that the root cause of being bound to the material world is attraction between male and female, and it makes a tight knot. That doesn't mean that everyone should simply renounce that immediately, but there's a way in which one can come to the point of having clear and natural realization so that one's not attached to the forms of the material world. And Rishabhadeva advised his sons to be very careful not to become re-entangled in the material world. He says, Nunam pramatak kurate vikama yanindriya pritaya aprinoti, that you took birth in a material body, so that wasn't a very good idea. So then he says, don't make it worse. It's already bad, so don't make a bad situation worse. And very stern kinds of instructions. He also gave instruction that those who take the position of teachers, they better be qualified. Don't take the position of a teacher unless your intention and qualification is to lead your students back to Godhead, to take them out of the material world. And this is the duty, he says, of any kind of leader, whether one be a mother, a father, a demigod, worshipable demigod, a spiritual master of any kind. And after giving all these instructions, of course, his sons took them to heart. Bharat took them to heart. He ruled the kingdom for some time. He had a beautiful family. He was extremely handsome. He was wealthy. He had a loving family, loving citizens. But because he understood that this material world is a temporary place and that the ultimate goal of life is to be able to remember the Lord at the time that one leaves this body, he renounced the kingdom and went off into the forest. And there he set up his practice. And this practice was to meditate on the Lord within the sun. Every morning when the sun would come up, he would sing the Gayatri Mantra, which worships the Lord who resides within the sun, and also Umdiya Sada Savriti Mandilabhadivarti Narayana Sasija Sana Sandivishtaha Kiyuravan Makara Kundalavan Kiriti Hari Harin Maya Bhapur Dijashanka Chakraha. This is a verse from the Vedas describing the form of the Lord within the sun. We can do this too. Sometimes devotees would go to the beach in Hawaii to go swimming, and then other devotees would tell on them and say, you're in Maya, you're going to the beach. So someone went to Prabhupada, said, Prabhupada, devotees are going to the beach. Is it Maya? Prabhupada said, the sun is there. Krishna's in the sun. In fact, that's one of his eyes, and he resides within the sun. He says that of bodies of water, I am the ocean. It's there. Of course, there's sharks. He didn't say that, but... But he said, how could you forget Krishna? But if one has the intention to remember Krishna, of course the sun comes up every day and one can remember. Even in Japan, you'll notice that when people are walking down the street and the sun just comes up, they'll stop and go like that, just as they do before they enter into any of their temples. They make that a sound to acknowledge the Lord has appeared, or I'm going to go see the Lord within the temple. So he's there, and Bharat Maharaj was regulating his senses. He ate very simple foods, those which were available in the forest, roots. You can eat ginger root here. It's one of the roots you can get. there are other kind of routes you can get. But fact is, the forest is very generous. There are all kinds of things you can eat that you can just gather without much trouble, no cooking or anything like that. And he would sit and chant his mantras and remember the Lord. He was bathing three times a day. It's mentioned that his hair was always wet because he was bathing in the sacred river. And then the Bhagavatam describes how he was feeling emotions for the Supreme Lord within his heart, because he was advancing and his heart was becoming soft in remembering the Lord. These kinds of emotions, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches to Sanatana Goswami, they arise when a ray of the internal potency of the Lord touches the heart, it melts the heart, and then one begins to experience emotions for the Lord, just as much as one might experience emotions in this world towards a loved one. Those are reflections of the real emotions that we have for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that can be awakened by the process of bhakti. And one day, as he was sitting and meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, almost to the stage of perfection, Prabhupada describes how he was at the stage of bhava, which is the state where I just described. And there was a lion roar, or a lion roared, and it's an impressive sound. All the animals in the forest stopped what they were doing. And it just so happened that there was a deer at the edge of the river where he was meditating. And when she heard this roaring sound, and it's described there in the text that she was always worried about being attacked because she's vulnerable. And not only that, she was pregnant, so she was especially aware to stay out of harm's way. But when she heard this roar of a lion, she became stressed and jumped across the river. And as she did, she miscarried. The little fawn fell out from her womb into the water, and she went into a cave. And due to shock, she lay down in that cave and died. And Bart was there observing what had happened. He now saw that this little baby deer was stranded. And out of a misplaced kind of sentiment, he thought, oh, now I should save the deer. So he brought it back to his ashram and began to nurture it. And as he did, he became more and more attached to the deer. And then, proportionately, he lost his spiritual practice. So I mentioned that something inspired me in this, and that is that there's a way in which Prabhupada describes that one has to be very careful as one's practicing devotional service. Because even if one becomes very advanced, if such a person becomes distracted, and either intentionally or by drifting, begins to lose his or her practice, is there a possibility that one can be waylaid and lose the opportunity that one has? Remembering the fact that I have an opportunity in this life to make a complete success is an important remembrance. If one becomes lazy and thinks, oh, it doesn't really matter, whatever happens, happens. Have you ever done that for a big test that you had to take somewhere? For instance, if you had to take a final exam and you sort of you got lazy brain and you thought, well, I probably listened enough in class, it doesn't really matter if I study to the last minute. What happens then? Huh? Fail? Yeah, that has been my experience. You have to be vigilant to the last second. And the serious practitioner, Prabhupada points out in these pages, is very careful not to become distracted from the practice, not to take it for granted, not to feel entitled, and not to think I'm already liberated so it doesn't matter. One should remain a neophyte. Stay in the simple practice, the regular practice. Don't think I'm beyond this now. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when describing how devotees make advancement in devotional service, he describes the way in which there's a seed of bhakti within the heart, and by hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, it waters the seed, and then the seed will grow. And the process of hearing and chanting is so effective that as you continue to water, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, the plant will grow all the way through the coverings of the universe into the past the virja, the demarcation between the material and spiritual worlds. It will go through the Brahman effulgence and make its way all the way to the highest planet in the spiritual world, Krishna Loka. There it will actually find Krishna's lotus feet, and in the creeper of devotional service that's growing from your own heart will entwine itself around Krishna's lotus feet. Just as you'll notice that creepers are very smart, they know how to grab onto things. All this by hearing and chanting. But Mahaprabhu warns that if in the process of doing this, even as your creeper has gone to the spiritual world while you're here in the material world still, if you give up the process of hearing and chanting, then that creeper will wither. Similarly, if you make offenses to Vaishnavas, especially, then that creeper can be smashed, just like when a mad elephant gets into your garden, then there's not much hope for the little plants there. So the hearing and chanting process has to go on continuously without stoppage. The chanting of Hare Krishna, especially one takes up a vow to chant a certain number of rounds every day, the degree to which one is vigilant about keeping that is the degree to which one will notice proportional advancement in devotional service. Not only that, one must read and hear from Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita. The main books that Prabhupada gave us are sufficient. And one has to be vigilant about reading them all the time. Someone just told me, it was Divyanga, I was talking to him because I'm going to see him soon. I'm going to Alachua after Washington, D.C. And he was saying, I just finished the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said I was doing 19 pages a day, and he felt like celebrating. When you finish the Chaitanya Charitamrita, not only do you feel like celebrating because it's such a worthy achievement, but also you feel uplifted. All the things that you'll hear in the Adi-lila, the Madhya-lila, the Antya-lila, will actually lift you above the doubts, which are like clouds that block the sun of spiritual world from your life. So these practices have to go on vigilantly. That's why there's a process of initiation. It's not an event, but a process in which we continually try to increase by increments our practice of bhakti. Many of you have had the experience, I'm sure, that when you're chanting your japa, as an example, you may, in the beginning, feel that it is a chore, but as you continue to chant, you may come to the 15th round, round 15 and a half, round 15 plus 107 beads, and then suddenly feel, oh, I just experienced something wonderful. And that seeing for oneself the spiritual energy and how it, the Lord's present in His name can keep one aloof from all of the winds of the material world, the great ocean which is always churning and causing people to drown. But if one stops that and becomes distracted and transfers the same energy that one, and faith that one was giving to one's a diligent practice to something else, and it happens all the time. People are, who are practicing devotional service, they're giving a certain amount of energy to the practice, and then by degrees they may transfer that to some other kind of practice, like, I don't know, collecting classic cars, or then sometimes people become involved in various kinds of philanthropy, but they give up their spiritual life. And oftentimes this happens as a result of association that's not favorable for advancing in devotional service, or negligence, because the material energy is so thick that when one neglects one's spiritual practice, then one degree after the next can forget the importance of practicing and think, oh, that was just nothing. And somebody can give up their practice for 10, 20, 35 years. I've seen it. It happens because the material nature is so powerful. So I'm going to read some from this, and you'll see why I gave such a preamble. This is chapter 8 of the fifth canto, the character of Bharat Maharaj. And partly, there's a description here where Bharat Maharaj is machinations about the deer are described in detail. And the Bhagavatam gives the psychology of one who becomes absorbed in the material nature, and you'll be able to appreciate how much the mind becomes attached to matter and how easily it happens. Text number one. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, one day after finishing his morning duties, evacuating, urinating, and bathing, Maharaj Bharat sat down on the bank of the river Gandaki. For a few minutes, he began chanting his mantra, beginning with Omkar. O king, while Bharat Maharaj was sitting on the bank of that river, a doe, being very thirsty, came there to drink. While the doe was drinking with great satisfaction, a lion, which was very close, roared very loudly. This was frightful to every living entity, and it was heard by the doe. By nature, the doe was always afraid of being killed by others, and was always looking about suspiciously. When it heard the lion's tumultuous roar, it became very agitated. Looking here and there with disturbed eyes, the doe, although it had not fully satisfied itself by drinking water, suddenly leaped across the water. The doe was pregnant, and when it jumped out of fear, the baby deer fell from its womb into the flowing waters of the river. Being separated from its flock and distressed by his miscarriage, the black doe, having crossed the river, was very much distressed. Indeed, it fell down in a cave and died immediately. The great King Bharat, while sitting on the bank of the river, saw the small deer, bereft of its mother, floating down the river. Seeing this, he felt great compassion. Like a sincere friend, he lifted the infant deer from the waves and, knowing it to be motherless, brought it to his ashrama. Purport. The laws of nature work in subtle ways unknown to us. Maharaj Bharat was a great king, very advanced in devotional service. He had almost reached the point of loving service to the Lord, but even from that platform, he could fall down onto the material platform. In Bhagavad Gita, we are therefore warned, Yam hina vyatyam tyete purusham purusharshapa samatuka sukham thiram samratatvaya kulpate. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation. Spiritual salvation and liberation from material bondage must be worked out with great caution. With great what? Otherwise, a little discrepancy will cause one to fall down again into material existence. By studying the activities of Maharaj Bharat, we can learn the art of becoming completely freed from all material attachment. As it will be revealed in later verses, Bharata Maharaj had to accept the body of a deer due to being overly compassionate for this infant deer. We should be compassionate by raising one from the material platform to the spiritual platform. Otherwise, at any moment, our spiritual advancement may be spoiled, and we may fall down onto the material platform. Maharaj Bharata's compassion for the deer was the beginning of his fall down into the material world. Text 8. Gradually, Maharaj Bharata became very affectionate toward the deer. He began to raise it and maintain it by giving it grass. He was always careful to protect it from the attacks of tigers and other animals. When it itched, he petted it, and in this way, he always tried to keep it in a comfortable condition. He sometimes kissed it out of love. Being attached to raising the deer, Maharaj Bharata forgot the rules and regulations for the advancement of spiritual life, and he gradually forgot to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After a few days, he forgot everything about spiritual advancement. Purport. From this, we can understand how we have to be very cautious in executing our spiritual duties by observing the rules and regulations and regularly chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. If we neglect doing this, we will eventually fall down. We must rise early in the morning, bathe, attend Mangala Arati, worship the deities, chant the Hare Krishna Mantra, study the Vedic literatures, and follow all the rules prescribed by the acharyas and the spiritual master. If we deviate from this process, we may fall down, even though we may be very highly advanced. Boom. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18.5, yajna dana tapa karma na tyajam karyam eva tat yajna dhanam tapaschaiva bhavanani manishinam. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up, but should be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great soul. Even if one is in the renounced order, he should never give up the regulative principles. He should worship the deity and give his time and life to the service of Krishna. He should also continue following the rules and regulations of austerity and penance. These things cannot be given up. One should not think oneself very advanced simply because one has accepted the sannyasa order. The activities of Bharata Maharaj should be carefully studied for one's spiritual advancement. In fact, Sanatana Goswami, in his Bhagavatamrita, mentions that there are various personalities who fell down from their practice of devotional service. And he quotes Shastra, which indicates that they did it intentionally to set an example for what not to do, and also how to make a comeback. But as we'll find with Maharaj Bharata, another aspect of this pastime that I find extremely inspirational is that after he falls down, he takes birth as a deer. I'm telling you things you already know, but it's such an astonishing story. You can talk about it again and again and go over it, as Prabhupada's saying here, study it carefully. When he took birth as a deer, he retained his remembrance of his previous life. He knew what happened, even in the body of a deer. This is Krishna's special mercy. Can I have a Bhagavad Gita, please? In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about how when one practices yoga with great endeavor in this life, then, thank you. By dint of the practice of one's previous life, six chants, even without seeking them, he gets the yogic principles. That's nice, you had that in front of you, huh? This is the way to become acquainted with scripture. Always associate with these scriptures. Keep them with you wherever you go. Keep them in front of you. Refer to them. Look at them. They'll guide you very carefully. So Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita how by dint of the practice of his previous life, purva samskara, he remembers, and naturally it comes to light. He becomes attracted to the yogic principles even without seeking them. 644, by virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted attracted to the yogic principles even without seeking them. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures, even without seeking them. So that's Krishna's mercy. He'll help us to remember our previous spiritual practice. And Bharat Maharaj was so advanced that even though he made this mistake, Krishna reminded him, even in the body of a deer, oh, you were a King Bharat. So as a deer, he's just a little baby deer, but he's got the consciousness of his previous life, complete remembrance. So he leaves his family. And this is where his practice becomes more intense, because he realizes how much of a mistake he made. He had such an opportunity and was so close, and then he lost it. And when that happens sometimes, then we become twice, 10 times more determined to be careful. It's one of the great lessons from this, is be careful. And if by hearing about this, one can get just an inkling for this mood of being careful in one's practice, then it can assist us in moving forward without becoming waylaid. After all, Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when teaching Sanatana Goswami about devotional service, said, avyarta kalatam. Prabhupada quotes this again and again. It means develop this mood of not wasting even a second. In fact, he quoted Chanakya Pandit saying that you can get money back anytime. People lose fortunes, they get it back. It's just money. But time you can't get back. Even if you become very wealthy, when your time comes, you can't get any more. In fact, you'll see, and we won't see tonight because we're not going to go that far, but when Bharat Maharaj becomes a deer, and then his next life, because of his practice as a deer, he continues his practice as a deer, he leaves home, he leaves a little deer home, and he goes back to associate with the sadhus. And he starts doing the Ashtanga practice he was doing before, taking bath 3 times a day. practicing very seriously. And then he becomes Jed Bharat. And then he wants nothing to do with the world, because he knows this is a tricky place. And I don't want to become connected to it at all. Shukadeva Goswami was in his Yam pravajantam anupetam apetit krityam dvaipayano viraha kartar ajuhava putreti tanmayataya taravobini dus tamsava bhuta hriyam munim anatosmi. Described at the beginning of the Bhagavatam how when Shukadeva Goswami came out of the womb, he took off, left home. His father's Vyasadev, he's calling after him, please come back, take the sacred thread at least. And he's like, no thanks, bye. You know, he just left. He didn't want anything to do with the material world. You couldn't slide a piece of paper in between. That there's no desire at all. In fact, there was a complete awareness of the danger of having any affection for the material world at all. This is there in Shukadeva and also in Jed Bharat. So Jed Bharat, in order to opt out of everything, he acted as if he was retarded and deaf and dumb. And his father was a diligent Brahmin and very affectionate towards his family, and especially towards Jed Bharat. He had 9 other sons, siblings. And he tried to teach Jed Bharat about the Brahminical principles, how to stay clean and so forth. He'd show him first, if you pass stool, then you have to take a bath. So Jed Bharat would take a bath, and then he'd pass stool. Everything he did opposite. Until his father, who was very diligent, he, just gave him affection. Mentions there that the father was very much attached to his family, and he had forgotten about death. But death did not forget about him. I love that line. He forgot about death, but death didn't forget about him. And Prabhupada mentions in his purport, death never forgets anyone. This is a good sutra to remember, that you may forget death, but death won't forget you. So, Judd Barrett then remains detached throughout his life and goes on remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, here, Prabhupada writes again, in end of the purport, text number 9, the activities of Bharat Maharaj should be carefully studied for one's spiritual advancement. So what does that mean, carefully study? Look at it carefully, compare it to your own life, and see the ways in which you can follow in the footsteps of Judd Barrett and imbibe these instructions. Next verse, 9. The great king Maharaj Bharat began to think, alas, this helpless young deer, by the force of time, an agent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has now lost its relatives and friends and has taken shelter of me. It does not know anyone but me, as I have become its father, mother, brother, and relatives. This deer is thinking in this way, and it has full faith in me. It does not know anyone but me. Therefore, I should not be envious and think that for the deer my own welfare will be destroyed. I should certainly raise, protect, gratify, and fondle it. When it has taken shelter with me, how can I neglect it? Even though the deer is disturbing my spiritual life, I realize that a helpless person who has taken shelter cannot be neglected. That would be a great fault. Srivas Panapurva, did you have a point? Oh. Okay.
Maharaj Bharat was a Kshatriya, and to abandon somebody who had taken shelter would be inappropriate for a Kshatriya. And then somebody raised this question that Maharaj Yudhishthira, when they ascended to heaven, Yamraj tested him in the form of a dog. And Yudhishthira Maharaj said, refuse to accept entry into heaven, so can if you can shed a little bit more light. They seemingly parallel analogies, but one took a birth as a deer later, but Maharaj Yudhishthira ascended to heaven.
Because he took care of the dog?
Yeah, so when he was about to ascend to heaven, he said, your dog cannot come with you, because this dog is not fit for heaven. But Maharaj Yudhishthira says that this dog has been taking shelter of me and has been following us for a long time now. I cannot go to heaven without this dog also being allowed entry into heaven.
And who is he saying that to?
To the people who were asking him to enter into heaven. So
I see.
And then later it was found out that that dog was Yamraj, and he was testing him. And so the answer I gave to that conundrum was that Maharaj Yudhishthira was executing his duty without being duly attached to the dog, whereas that Maharaj Bharat forgot about the Supreme Lord while taking care of the deer. So I could be wrong. If you can chastise or correct me.
Thank you. That really helps. Feel free if anybody asks a difficult question to answer it. It's a different psychology involved. Vijay?
Judd Bharat assumed that responsibility of the Yudhishthira got it because the dog was actually walking with him, and therefore by rules of Shastra, if someone walks 7 paces with you, he becomes a lifelong friend. So Yudhishthira had a responsibility as a friend. Bharat Maharaj assumed the responsibility, and he was not acting as a Kshatriya king that time. So maybe there's a little bit of difference there.
Lucky we have our spiritual attorneys here tonight too. Yeah, I've experienced that because we've had a couple dogs follow us on parikram. But we were thinking of Shivananda Sain, and it's like, yeah, it's part of the Sankirtan party. Anybody can join. Okay, purport. When a person is advanced in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, he naturally becomes very sympathetic toward all living entities suffering in the material world. Naturally, such an advanced person thinks of the suffering of the people in general. However, if one does not know of the material sufferings of fallen souls and becomes sympathetic because of bodily comforts, as in the case of Bharat Maharaj, such sympathy or compassion is the cause of one's downfall. If one is actually sympathetic to fallen, suffering humanity, he should try to elevate people from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. As far as the deer was concerned, Bharat Maharaj became very sympathetic, but he forgot that it was impossible for him to elevate a deer to spiritual consciousness, because after all, the deer is but an animal. It was very dangerous for Bharat Maharaj to sacrifice all his regulative principles simply to take care of an animal. The principles enunciated in Bhagavad Gita should be followed. Yamhi navyati antyeti purusham purusharshapa. As far as the material body is concerned, we cannot do anything for anyone. I'm going to repeat that because it's such a stark statement, but this is very helpful. In a morning walk, a gentleman runs up to Prabhupada and starts to tell him about a program that he has to help people with some physical ailment they have in their body. Prabhupada says, where's that in the Bhagavad Gita? He wanted to know. And the man was arguing more and more for it. Prabhupada said, then you could, you know, try to help every aspect of the body. You could work hard to help people's fingers, their toes, and their arms, and so forth. But it's a lost cause, because you can't. And as I'll repeat here, as far as the material body is concerned, we cannot do anything for anyone. However, by the grace of Krishna, we may raise a person to spiritual consciousness if we ourselves follow the rules and regulations. If we give up our own spiritual activities and simply become concerned with the bodily comforts of others, we will fall into a dangerous condition. 10. Even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. One should certainly neglect his own personal interest, although they may be very important, to protect one who has surrendered. And your question was important because there's a way in which we find devotees become compassionate towards all living entities, but one has to distinguish, as one's administering this compassion, am I doing it out of misguided sentiment for the body, or am I helping them to advance spiritually? So one has to discriminate. One has to see the difference. It's also important to have guidance when one's doing these kinds of things as well, which Bharat Maharaj apparently doesn't have in this situation. Purport, Maya is very strong, period. In the name of philosophy, altruism, and communism, people are feeling compassion for suffering humanity throughout the world. Philanthropists and altruists do not realize that it is impossible to improve people's material conditions. Material conditions are already established by the superior administration according to one's karma. They cannot be changed. The only benefit we can render to suffering beings is to try to raise them to spiritual consciousness. Material comforts cannot be increased or decreased. Increased or decreased. In India, Prabhupada was on a morning walk, and the devotees were pointing out to him, I think it was Calcutta, but the government had enacted a program to build some dwellings for people who were homeless and living on the streets. They had a whole setup there on the streets. You know, they're washing up, there's a broken pipe, and then they're washing all their pots, and they just live there. So there was a government building complex, and they attempted to move these homeless people into the buildings, which they did to some degree, but then the devotee was pointing out, because he was aware of current affairs there, that they had moved back onto the street and sublet their places to other people. And Prabhupada said, this is their karma. And then he said, because there were Americans there walking with Prabhupada, he said, you're Americans. You come to India and you live like Americans, even though you're in India, because that's your karma. That was a revelation when I heard that. Wherever we go, we take our karma with us, and you can't get more and you can't get less. You won't. It's predestined as far as happiness and distress. Talabhyate dukha vadanyata sukham. As far as material happiness is concerned, that comes without effort, just as tribulations come without effort. Material happiness and pain can be attained without endeavor. One should not bother for material activities. If one is at all sympathetic or able to do good for others, he should endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. This is real life. If you can develop this awareness that my only advancement in life is to advance spiritually, step by step, somehow or other. As I do my due diligence to my duties, I consider them to be official, important, in, to the degree that I have to do my duty, but my real heart and soul is in making advancement spiritually. And as one does that, one becomes less and less obligated to the material world. Krishna makes such an arrangement. In fact, the Bhagavatam says, Devarshi bhutat nandrinam pitrinam nakin koronayam nanicharajan saravatmanaya sharanam sharanyam kato mukundam priyashritakartam. And that is, when one's fully surrendered to Lord Mukunda, one's no longer a rini, a debtor to the demigods, deva, devas, the rishis, who have given us, passed down so many advantages. Devarshi bhutatna, dhrinam pitrinam, there's the forefathers, their parents have given the body, their animals who do so much service for us. But one who is fully surrendered to Lord Mukunda and doing, giving their heart and soul to devotional service is no longer a debtor, and one feels that that debt becomes gradually lifted. That's why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva dharmam parityaja nam ekam shararam braja antam sarva papi bhyo moksha shami masujaha. Finishing the purport and then getting ready for some reflections. Material happiness and pain can be attained without endeavor. One should not bother for material activities. If one is at all sympathetic or able to do good for others, he should endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. In this way, everyone advances spiritually by the grace of the Lord. For our instruction, Bharat Maharaj acted in such a way. We should be very careful not to be misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in bodily terms. One should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost. I love that sentence. I'm going to read it again, if I may. One should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost. There's so much in that one sentence, because there's a way in which Prahlad Maharaj says, what is the verse? Naivatmana prabhurayam nijadabhapurno manam janada vidusa karuna vranite yet yachchano bhagavate bhagavate grihite hitamanam tachchatmane pratimukasi yatamukashi. He says that Krishna doesn't need any benefit from us. But when we give whatever we have, our attention, our material goods, our energy to him, then we benefit. That's an equation that, if one understands that, it changes everything. Because he says, Prahlad, we are parts of Krishna. And when we serve the whole, then the parts are automatically taken care of, naturally taken care of. And he gives the example, pratimukhasi yata mukhashi, just like the when you see your face in the mirror. If you decorate yourself, right? Anyone take a little time? You know, just like Tilak, Prabhupada said, this is because people can't afford jewelry in the age of Kali. We wear Tilak because it's very beautiful. Save yourself a lot of money. You wear Tilak. It's very beautiful, Tilak. So you wear your Tilak and maybe put a few gopi dots, whatever it is. And then you look in the mirror and you'll see, oh, look, the reflection is decorated. It's very beautiful. So similar way, when you give your energies to Krishna, then you become decorated, you become glorified. That's how the equation works. Not the other way, you can't do it separately. So Prabhupada writes these sentences that you could just live off of for the rest of your life. Just have it tattooed on your arm, if you like, and then go around and read it every day. He says, one should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost. And also, this idea of getting the favor of Lord Vishnu. If you scheme ways in which to get the favor of Lord Vishnu, it's not a mechanical process. He's a person. And you can watch it in the Krishna conscious movement. You can see for yourself. You can watch some sincere neophyte come into the assembly of devotees and then do whatever he or she can to get the favor of the Lord. They listen and they understand. They say, oh, that's how you get the favor of Krishna. So then they try for it. And as they get Krishna's favor, Krishna promotes them naturally. I've seen it even recently. I was staying at Govardhan, and I observed various devotees in their approach to life. And I saw several devotees. One in particular I saw was just going out of his way to do as much service as possible everywhere. Serving the devotees. I mean, everywhere I looked, it was like others were noticing too. It was like, does he have a twin here or something? It's just constantly serving. And I noticed that the attitude towards him, the devotees, first of all, became very favorably disposed. And then I just noticed how, just before our very eyes, even within a month, he was becoming more advanced. And there's a way in which people try very hard in Silicon Valley and other places in the corporate world to advance themselves. Yes? And, you know, it doesn't always work out. Because even if you make it to the top, then one day you can go in and they'll have a little security guard standing there and say, okay, get your stuff, you got 5 minutes to get out, take all your things. You can lose it all very quickly. But Krishna never forgets. If you do anything for him, he always considers it the greatest thing that anybody's ever done. He's so grateful. That's one of his qualities. We're coming up on Thanksgiving, so. It's one of his qualities, so grateful. So a person who gets this, who understands, my job in life is to try to get the favor of Lord Vishnu. If you do that, if you make that your main goal in life, you'll always be happy. Because even as you're performing austerities to do that, you'll realize he's a person. He'll recognize me, and he will. He gives so much mercy just for doing little things, just for trying to do your service properly. You try to chant nicely, even though you can't. You try. And Krishna likes it. And you try to offer a lamp. You go out of your way, you drive through the rain or the snow or whatever, and you come and you offer the lamp and card. Whatever it is, Krishna notices it, and he lifts you up. He knows where you are. He's right there in your heart. So trying to get the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. It's the way that if one conducts oneself in this way, he will never want for anything. One should not give up his interest in attaining this favor of the Lord. People have interests, they have financial interests in various enterprises. People say, they use this term, you know, I have an interest in that building or that enterprise and so forth. But they'll be disappointed. But if you have an interest in getting the favor of Lord Vishnu, that's where your investment will pay off. Even if it's tiny. Krishna says, Neha bikramanashosti pratyavayana vidyate. Swopam. If you make a tiny investment in this, then the returns are unbelievable. People say that all the time. In the 80s, there were these penny stocks. Junk bonds, too. Mike Milken was the king of junk bonds. Any of you know about that? They're just, you know, companies that weren't worth anything, and then they were, and the, their stocks on the stock exchange were selling for pennies, and they would promise you, you know, if you hit one, then you'll become a great millionaire or something like that. Just by putting in a little, you'll get a lot. There's all kinds of schemes like that. But it's all lies. It never works. And even when it does, you can't keep it. You can't digest it. But this you can digest, because living entities live by the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if you just try to please Krishna, make a little endeavor, then you become wealthy. Consequently, they sacrifice their original interest, the attainment of Vishnu's favor, and engage in philanthropic activities for bodily comforts. So, now we'll take a few reflections before I move on. Yes?
Thank you, Prabhu, for the nice lecture. Your lecture actually reminded me when Prabhupada's disciples, they were putting them into too much danger for preaching, and Prabhupada also told that the highest principle first is to save yourself, then help others. I have a question. Actually, while driving through the road, sometimes I've seen people with placards showing that they are like they lost their job or they don't have any home, homeless people, they are on the streets, and sometimes they reach out to us also in the cars for help, like giving some money or anything. So I think actually what's the best way to help them? Because if you give them money, then
always carry in your car prasadam and books. You know, Tushta, when I'm in Denver, a lot of the intersections, there are people with signs. So he always has a little bucket full of prasadam. And when we pull up there, it's really fun. You give him prasadam, you can give him some books. In fact, I had a scheme I was thinking of that we could actually ask these people to distribute books at the intersection. I mean, I don't know if it was the best PR in the world, but it could be interesting. You know, there could be hundreds of them. They do well also, by the way. I mean, there are investigative stories that show that they do well. And, you know, if we could interest them and, like, okay, pass out prasadam, you know, give everyone a lollipop, and then when they give you something, give them a book. We'll give them something like that. What do you think? We could try it. In any case, it's good. Just recently, I was somewhere, I think it was in North Carolina or something like that, we pulled up to, and he said, oh, yeah, give him some prasadam. We handed, there's a lady at the, gave him prasadam, gave him a book, and we drove off, and we were coming back the other way, and she was sitting there reading the book, the Ishapanishad or something like that. It's always good to have prasadam. When I go around Vrindavan, I always have my pockets full of lollipops that I offer to my, I offer them directly to my deities, because Prabhupada told us we could, in 1972. And then, whenever I go out, you know, people ask for stuff. They say, you know, give me, give me, give me. And I say, here you go. Here's your lollipops. No one ever complains. So you get a lollipop for a second. You know, they may look at it and go, like, that's not a rupee, you know. And then they go, yeah, but it's a lollipop. That's not bad. Even monkeys don't mind, you know, if they look at you and they, you give them a lollipop, they go, wow, that's pretty cool. In fact, I noticed, not to divert too much, but the monkeys in Vrindavan, just an interesting study, the rhesus monkeys, they're so passionate. They grab the lollipop and they chomp on it. It's gone within 3 seconds. But the langurs, I gave a langur a lollipop, and he accepted it so graciously, took the wrapper off, and he licked it like you know, a gentleman, and he put it down for a minute, picked it back up, and looked at it. Anyway, prasadam distribution is endlessly, not only fascinating, but it is fulfilling. We should always be giving. If you go out, if you organize your life towards giving, you'll always feel satisfied. In fact, even when you're down, you should be thinking about how to give to others. And when you do that, think how to do good for others, you'll come out of your little, small world of the mind that I'm so poor, I'm so bereft, And if you give on behalf of Krishna, that means prasadam. Prabhupada talks a lot about prasadam distribution in the Bhagavatam and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In fact, he says in previous ages, people would give away all kinds of gold and clothing and stuff, and he says we can't afford it in Kali Yuga, therefore we should distribute prasadam profusely. So if you put prasadam in your car, you put it in your... When I travel, I'm traveling tomorrow, I have a big bag of lollipops I keep in my bag, and everywhere I go, ask Nirkula. Because when we travel together, everybody gets a lollipop. And you just, at the counter, you go to the ticket counter, here's a lollipop. Everyone's like, hey, what about me? You know, everybody wants one. And you go through security, sometimes the cops won't take them because they're all, I can't take, I'm a cop. But every, you know, people like lollipop, they like prasadam, and they'll like you when you give up prasadam. Go to the bank, make your deposit, give them some prasadam, give them a cookie. They'll say, well, thank you very much. They'll think it was like special for the holidays or something. Then you come back 2 weeks later, hopefully make another deposit. You give them another cookie, and they say, I remember you, you're the one who gave me the cookie. Come back third time, 2 weeks later, make a deposit, give the teller a cookie. Who are you? What's your philosophy in life? Why are you giving out such nice things to people? Then you can give them a book. And prasadam opens the world to Krishna consciousness. It's the most important thing, prasadam distribution. You got to distribute prasadam. Otherwise, life's boring. But if you just get yourself a ton of prasadam, drive around, give it out, meet people, give prasadam, life becomes instantly fascinating and worth living. Otherwise, it's boring, depressing. Isn't it? It's horrible. I mean, the way people think nowadays and the way the world's going, but it can be counteracted by prasadam. That's all the world needs, is tons of prasadam. Everywhere we go, give out prasadam. Sorry, I got a little passionate about that.
Hey Krishna, Maharaj, I'm planning tomorrow to come to the airport to get some prasadam from you. Maharaj, one point you made about how the devotees who come just recent, new for devotee, and then...
Yes.
So I've seen like in our corporation also that devotee join, and then from their enthusiasm they wanted to do some for the corporate employer and open the club, and I see that progress they made of chanting their own realization in Krishna consciousness was like a exponential curve. Then just so I could see in my own realization that how when that point you mentioned about taking the service, the new for devotee, when they take service and the enthusiasm, and then their advancement in Krishna consciousness.
Yes. Try to please Krishna. Just try to please Krishna. That means please the devotees. Do some seva, and you'll be noticed, and you'll automatically... Prabhupada said it's like a corporation, Sankirtan movement. And he said, just like in a corporation, if you do nice work, you'll be noticed and you'll be promoted. And in a similar way, if you're sincere and you do some nice service in the Sankirtan movement, you'll be noticed and you'll be promoted. And it's Krishna that's doing who's doing it through the devotees. It's Lord Chaitanya. 1, 2. Oh, sorry.
Maharaj, Bharat is thinking about the dear compassion, and he thinks that, you know, he's come to my shelter, so I should take care. Unless one has very proper guidance, his thought process, it looks quite, you know, reasonable. I mean, even it sounds, you know, very correct, and it will sound correct unless we have proper guidance. Similar to how, like, you know, Arjuna, whatever arguments he gives in chapter 1, if we don't see what Krishna has told him, they sound very, you know, logical. But once we have the proper guidance, it opens up and tells us what is more important to us.
Yes, and Prabhupada's giving a very clear line here throughout, is woven in this understanding. He's quoted twice at least, yam hi nav yatayante te purusham purusharshabha samadukha sukham tiram somritat vayakalpate. This is a very foundational verse in the Bhagavad Gita, and that is that don't be affected by the comings and goings of emotions in the material world. In fact, in that purport, it's not when you read it a Sunday feast purport. It's all about, you know, renouncing the world. Of course, you know, it's about how if you can cut off everything ultimately and take sannyas, then you know, you can be successful in life. It doesn't mean you officially have to take sannyas, but you have to progressively go through your life and distance yourself from the attachments to the material world and the reactions that we have because of the emotions that are created by our attachments, and solidly transfer our determination towards serving Krishna by having a clear realization that the material world is going on as a phantasmagoria. There's a lot of duality here, that it is the world of duality, and it's illusory. It's an illusory concept, a play of lights. We're seeing the various material elements being churned by the three modes of material nature, and we're taking it as reality. So one has to become divested from that conception of life. This is what it means to become dhira, undisturbed. And yes, very nice point, you have to be directed properly as you go through the various aspects of your life. There are ways in which can be artificially applied. For instance, my own observation when I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, close to the early days of Krishna Consciousness, 1973, I saw a lot of artificial renunciation. People who would neglect their families, or they would act indifferent to everything, but they couldn't sustain that. And there's a way in which the Bhagavatam even says one should not neglect your families. For grihasthas, you have to give emotional support. Prahlad Maharaj, Narada Muni is teaching this. You have to give emotional support. Internally, you may see that I'm playing a role here in this world. But I have to play the role, and I have to give emotion. You can't damage people emotionally by artificially pulling back from them. But internally, you have to be aware of the fact that I'm not my body, and neither are they. Okay, so... okay, 1, 2, 3. Or, 1, 2, 3. There you go.
Maharaj, I like the point which you was mentioned, Prabhupada, that attain the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost.
Yes.
Because in our corporate world, when we work, we always try to please in whatever capacity, and that is not always enough, because there are many competing forces, and they always expect do beyond what you are, what extra you are doing. Everybody else is doing the same thing. You need to do beyond than that. What we call it, beyond your scope of duty, and take some extra initiative, which is nobody else has taken. And even then, that has to satisfy somebody who is totally imperfect, your boss. So, here, when Krishna is always willing to even acknowledge a tiny bit of peace, this is such a big relief that we could do these things rather than doing what other we do.
Isn't it though? Yeah. And Prabhupada talks, you'll hear in one of his early lectures, there's apparently this Indian woman was trying to join Krishna consciousness. Her name was Mrs. Sharma. You heard this, right? And he wants to she wants to join and become part of the Krishna consciousness movement. She's apparently older in age, and then Prabhupada comments, he said, so she's served her family, the kids have grown up, now she wants to do full-time service, and they won't let her. And he said, this is an example. He said, material life, no one's ever satisfied. It's not enough. For Krishna, he gets satisfied really easily, but the family, whatever, you can serve, and then it's okay, now I want to serve Krishna. It's like, no, you have to serve us. He gave that as the epitome of the way that the material world works. So, yes. 1, 2.
Yes, it was just alarming how you read again and again that even Bharat Maharaj could
got distracted.
You got the point.
Yes.
But that's what my inspiration was. I was alarmed. When I finished reading this morning, I was my nerves were jangled. I was like, you got to be careful here, right?
Yes, I was just thinking, like, how back to the basics, how Prabhupada says in the purport that Mangalarati, chanting, it feels like same thing again and again, but I remember even coming to the temple, if I think that I'm going to this temple for the first time and there is some awe and reverence and enthusiasm, like, and see every devotees with, like, the real devotees and you don't see their faults, then that beginner's enthusiasm is always there and you always stress that, and that's what Prabhupada is putting in another way, that we should do go back to the basics.
Yes, thank you very much. Sukeshwari. There's a text? Okay.
I was just thinking of a couple of points, Prabhu. I love the point that you said about after doing the 15 rounds, you just want to chant more. When you start chanting, it's an endeavor to...
If you're lucky. I wasn't saying that always happens.
Yeah, I was just going to finish it with saying that I very rarely feel it, but I could get the point there, but that's just
if that could happen to you one time in your life, it's enough to sustain you. This is how nice bhakti is. And if you actually have a real... This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings in the song, Nam Gai Gaura Madhusvare, Ek Bar Nam Rash Matore. Try to get that feeling, like it's a little bit like intoxication. You know, it's like, what was that? Well, that was pretty good. You know, people get addicted like that. There's an opioid epidemic now, because people, you know, something happens, they hurt their hand or whatever, and the doctor says, here, take some of these. And they take one and they go, like, oh my God, I feel much better about life now. It's like, I'll have another. And then they keep going. So it's the same thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying, try to get this kind of intoxication. Get addicted to this. And you get it one time. He said, if you can actually taste the intoxication, there could be a Harinam epidemic rather than an opioid. You can see it on the news. People become addicted to the holy names. They're spending more and more time chanting now. I don't know what the present government would do about it, but...
The other point I wanted to know is, you were talking about entitlement. How do you get rid of that entitlement? The mind will just put you in a spot every single moment if somebody says good.
Try to get chastised by somebody in public. Or try to lead a kirtan and then forget the words to the Maha Mantra. Or something like that. Not intentionally, but I mean, these things can... It's good to get a good smack upside the head sometimes. And if you're around devotees who can put you in your place, chastise you, that always helps. So it's really hard to be beyond chastisement. This is something that... there's a way in... I'm sorry, go ahead.
So you get chastised? So yeah. I didn't get the point.
Try to get chastised.
Why would devotees chastise you?
What's that?
I was just wondering, why would devotees chastise you?
Well, if you're around devotees who are either your peers or more advanced than you, then they might feel free to chastise you. I mean, I have got brothers that feel free to point out my faults, and I like being around them. You know, it's helpful. What? Yeah, but if it's on that level, they probably won't do it anyway. The ones who are inclined to chastise, they freely administer such things. But also, you know, just remember where you came from. This is something that Prabhupada talks about in one of his purports. He said, remember where you came from. You know, and other people are coming in and you're thinking, why are they coming in? It's like, where did you come from? You know, which hole were you pulled out of? Remember that. Remember where you came from. And don't feel... You should always be meek and humble. This is one of the processes of surrender. So always feel meek and humble. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says it is so clear, and it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that you have to wear it around your neck. That you should feel that I'm fallen. I'm the lowest of everybody. I'm everybody else's servant. And if you constantly maintain that, then you have somewhere to go. You have something to ask for. If you lose your... If you're not needy, then you're not hungry. If you're not needy and hungry, you've got nothing to ask Krishna for. You can chant, but you don't have any appetite for it. Because chanting really means you're asking Krishna for help and service. And if you already feel like, I'm good, that's why it's nice to go in Sankirtan. You meet people all the time. You say, here, take a look at this. I'm good. And you know, you're just thinking like, that's me. That's their thing about I'm good. And they're not really. That's me chanting, and I'm thinking, I'm good. I don't need anything, Krishna. I'm already full. I'm satisfied. So the real trick is to always stay needy and to get rid of the entitlement mentality and feel that I'm the neediest of all. I've got nothing. I'm a kinchana. I don't have one speck of advancement in devotional service. I'm just lucky somebody let me in here. And if they notice that I'm here, they might kick me out. I should feel like that rather than feeling like I'm entitled. Then we can get some traction in devotional service. These are the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes.
I just also want to thank you, Prabhu. Last time you had mentioned that you should give these homeless people some prasadam, and I have been giving sometimes. Recently, yesterday, I was giving a bag of grapes, and I was just thinking that the point that you mentioned about books is going to be enormous. I never had that thought, but yeah.
Yeah. Give them books, and you can also give them a few, tell them to pass them out. We can make a deal with them, right? I mean, we get them all together, we could start like a little mafia kind of thing. It would be in the news. Okay, yes. Mic to the back.
About the philanthropic topic, sometimes I think like it's really too much rooted in the way we live, way and in society. Like yesterday I was in a grocery store, Thanksgiving time, do you want to donate $1 for this? They ask like at the counter, do you want to donate for the lunch for schools? And sometimes people being obliged to do that rather than they want to do willingly. So how do we see first of all ourselves, like that's the right cause or not, and how we encourage others to take an interest in the ultimate goal?
I didn't quite, can you restate the question? What's the actual question?
Sure. So I explained like, you know, nowadays the philanthropic work is...
Yeah, I got that part, but just like what's the specific question about it?
Specific question is like how we encourage others to, you know, serve to the ultimate goal rather than the...
Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that if people are already engaged in some kind of philanthropy or something like that, you shouldn't discourage them, but you should encourage them. In fact, Krishna himself gives a progression in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He said, always think of me. Just fix your mind and be in ecstasy in my service. He said, if you can't do that, then follow the practice of devotional service and you'll come to that point. If you can't do that, then work and give away a portion of your earnings to spread Krishna consciousness. So if you can't do that, then just try to be charitable. And Prabhupada gives in the purport the way in which we should encourage people to be charitable, volunteer for things, give away some of your money, because from there there's a beginning of this feeling of giving. But then, of course, the verse I'm referring to, Krishna says, in encourage people to work in the spirit of devotion. You know, don't try to stop them from what they're doing already. They have some kind of, and this is what they have some kind of inclination to do good, but it may not be finely tuned yet. So when we go out or stay in, whatever, wherever we are, we're not to simply contradict what people are already doing, but it's more like to help to engage them in devotional service, in the way we teach, in the way we meet people. It's not so abrupt as telling people that everything you're doing is a useless waste of time. It's more accepting what they're already doing and channeling, helping them to channel it into a more fine-tuned state that actually everything comes from Krishna ultimately. It takes a step-by-step process. As some people you know, throughout the Vedas, there are ways in which the Vedas try to help people from different perspectives in life to start engaging in some kind of worship. Even there are people who worship demigods, so there's ways in which they're encouraged, because at least you're worshiping somebody. And then you start to see, oh, there's a result from that, so that the scriptures must be true. And from there, you can start to see, okay, where do all these demigods come from? So there's always a way in which one can expertly guide people to come closer to the perfectly fine-tuned position of bhakti, which is that everything goes to Govinda.
This is a subtopic on that question. Like, if one is practicing devotional service, do he shut down the door for the philanthropic work or not?
It depends. There are ways in which if somebody, in Prabhupada, even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta on a yatra saw some of his devotees, mostly grihasthas, walk by some beggars. He went back personally and gave them a donation. And he said, if you don't, you know, give, then you become hard-hearted. And Prabhupada mentions it in some place about you know, this idea of giving to people. Of course, we don't just give without discrimination also. We have to be careful. That's why prasadam is the perfect thing. Because everyone's happy. Mostly everybody. Yes. So be philanthropic. I mean, that's why prasadam and festivals and things like that, people really like it. Because, you know, when you give out prasadam, then everyone loves you. And they should, because you're giving prasadam. It's really nice. That's why Prabhupada liked it. He said nobody should go hungry within a 10-mile radius of the Krishna Conscious Center. And he said, you know, anybody walks in the temple at any time, they should be able to get prasadam. We should be known as the people who feed people. In fact, they just put up a street sign, did you know this, in Florida? In Gainesville, they named a street after the Krishna lunch. It's been there for 35, 40 years now. And anywhere you go in Dallas, Texas, I went door to door there, and you just say Kalachungis, that's the restaurant there. Kalachungis, oh look, come on in. Give prasadam. That's the real philanthropy. We have it from the internet, and then we have Malini. Okay, 1, 2, 3.
So these are from the Facebook, and I'm going in the reverse order because I think what you said is also what Prem Vrishti Mataji is saying. And she says, love the statement that if you aren't distributing prasadam, life is boring. Best statement ever. Thank you so much for that. Then we have Katie Mataji. She's from Columbus, Ohio. And she gives you her pranams, and she says that, yes, Krishna is there for us daily.
Nice.
Then we have Bhaktin Diana from New York, and she says that when you give your energy to Krishna, you become decorated.
Nice.
And Vashana Devi Mataji from India, she says, Jai Guru Maharaj, if Bharat Maharaj could get deviated, then a person like me, who is still struggling to handle the situations in life, shows I'm still on the platform of reformation and a beginner. Thank you so much for this lecture, Shri Gurudev.
Thank you.
And can I add one comment?
Yes.
So I really want to thank you for these two set of lectures that you gave from Sunday and then again today. It reminds me of the side-by-side verse that you often quote from Ishopanishad, that you should learn transcendental and Nishayan. So Sunday you talked to us about how to control our life, and then today it's like if you drift, then what happens? So thank you so much for that.
Ruchi, I really appreciated the point where you said that we should be very careful when performing the devotional service, and especially we should be vigilant till the last second.
Mm.
I was just thinking that so often you get so distracted by so many things, and you may not be putting the same kind of effort that you need to put in every second. So this was very nice to hear how Bharat Maharaj was distracted. But
one thing that's helped me lately, it seems like there's so many things to do, what can happen is I'll think about all the things I have to do, and then my brain shuts down because I think it's not possible. So what I decided to do was to do one thing at a time. This sounds very Buddhistic, but it's very helpful, and I'm just passing it on. But just, I realize that everything has a consequence. And if I put my heart into the task at hand right now, and I just think, although this is a small piece of all the, or one small item that I have to do amongst so many different things, it has to get done sometime. And if I do it with diligence and I appreciate what it is right now, especially when dealing with people or devotees, is give attention to it. Because there can be a way in which I do so many things, or I try to do everything at once, so I'm not doing anything. I'm here, but I'm thinking of something else, always moving away from what I'm doing. But if I try to do it with full concentration, it takes away that angst of trying to do too many things. Same time, the other thing that helps is prioritizing. So if I can make a list of those of all the things that have to be done, that really helps to work from a list, rather than let them go around in your head. This is in that book called Getting Things Done. You know this book? David Allen, yeah, Getting Things Done. So he talks about taking things out of your mind and putting them in a trusted system where you know where they are. Because they'll keep banging around your mind for years if you don't do them. They'll just keep floating. Whatever you're doing, taking a shower, cooking, and it comes up again. And you go like, so take it out, put it somewhere, and then prioritize it. And find out what are the most important things to do first. And generally, those things are the ones that I dread doing the most. And if you can start with those things before you do the other things, then it frees up a lot of energy. Just some practical thoughts. Was there one more? Yes.
I liked a lot of points today, but the point that struck me the most is like, you cannot change anybody's physical or material condition because everybody is born with his or her karma. Yeah. I would like to relate to another branch of Vedic philosophy, not devotional philosophy. Recently I was studying some astrology cult stuff. So one person asked one question to a very big astrologer, like, should we try to interact our karma, like the planets that we are born with, or should we just flow with that? Then the astrologer answered the similar answer that Prabhupada gave, like, the planets are very powerful and it indicates our karma. No matter whatever we do, we buy rings and whatnot, but we can never counteract the karma that we are born with. So the advice that he was giving, so it is better to know what karma you are with, that means that your astrological chart, and act accordingly. Try to help others, because he's not a devotee, he was giving example, try to help others and try to help yourself. And then the whole discussion of, then what is the point of free will? Everything is predetermined or everything is within karma, then what is the free will? Then the astrologer gave the answer, the only free will that you have is, you cannot change your karma, you cannot change your material stuffs, but the only free will you have is whether you will surrender to divine or not. So I really like the point, even though he was not devotee, but from the Vedic astrological point, he was saying the same thing that is written in the Bhagavatam.
Yeah. Tasyaiva heto prayatete kovido na labhyate tad dukhavad yad brahmatam yata sukha talabhyate dukhavadanyata sukham kalena sarvatra gabhira rambasa. So there's a way in which Narada Muni says a similar thing. Only one slight point I would interject is that there's a way in which when one does worship Krishna, karmani nirudahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam, it's just important to emphasize, as Prabhupada does in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, that karma is not eternal. It can come to an end by surrendering to Krishna. And as one surrenders to Krishna, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Sridhar Swami say that you no longer have karma, although it may appear that way. It's actually Krishna's direct intervention in your life just to help you to purify the last vestiges of connection desire you have to enjoy the material world.
One last point.
So Maharaj, one comment I wanted to make is that in your class, we don't laugh artificially. It's all devotional laughter, and laughter is a very good medicine, basically, I heard from somewhere. So we get all devotional laughter. And another comment I wanted to make.
You could start like a devotional comedy club or something.
Another comment I wanted to make regarding this Bharat Maharaj's pastime is that when he was in bhava stage, his heart became soft. And when your heart becomes soft, almost you have this sense of detachment and giving up. And at that time, you feel that whatever comes to me, it's divine. You start feeling like that, and you forget the fact that Maya can still attack you, basically. I mean, with that feeling what you have in your heart, Maya can still attack you. And that is what happened to Bharat Maharaj, is that he forgot his spiritual goal. It's not that when the bhava comes, his spiritual goal is over. Spiritual goal is still there. You have left your material goals, but spiritual goal is still there. And whatever is happening in your life, you have to either go to the scriptures or go to the living acharyas and make sure you are making the right decisions. Which of course Bharat Maharaj in this case did not have, so he took the wrong step.
Yes. Yeah, good point. Thank you for your comments, and everyone else, and for coming here tonight. Natari Ar Marman, Natari Ar Marman, hey! Natari Ar Marman, Natari Ar Marman, Natari Ar Marman, Natari Ar Marman.